All right, a couple basketball stories going on today. K-State has landed a transfer, Mark Smith, out of Mizzou. I think about as well as you could reasonably expect K-State to do on the transfer market. Guy who's averaged 10 points per game over his career, 10 points a game last year. Shooting numbers dipped from a 45% three-point clip as a sophomore to 31% last year, but 35% for his career, has taken a lot of threes, pretty good shooter, four-star recruit out of high school. K-State has been in on him now three times. We'll hear more about Mark Smith from Carrington Harrison, my friend from 610 Sports in Kansas City. Next segment, he is a guy who's really well-connected at Mizzou and is a huge Mizzou fan, so he's watched a lot of Mark Smith. We'll also laugh at Kansas together because, you know, the enemy of thy enemy is my friend. But I want to talk about what Gene Taylor had to say yesterday when I asked him about expectations for next year. Because a lot of the conversation around Mark Smith and whoever it is that K-State is going to land is going to be, how close does this get you to the tournament? Because my expectation would be the tournament next year. If Bruce Weber is coming back, you need to be a tournament team next year. I think the general fan base is pretty firm in that. But what is the actual expectation internally from the athletic director? I asked Gene Taylor that question point blank. Is it as cut and dried as the tournament is the expectation for next season?
Well, there's more to it. I mean, and certainly, like I said, you know, what am I going to get into specifics of what we laid out as expectations or what his expectations were, but I will tell you that what he hopes with this program and what I hope with this program going forward were exactly the same. So, but there's, you know, there's a lot of other things other than just that. But again, what he laid out and what I had in mind were both exactly what we were both on the same page on it.
Okay, so that's not an answer, really. It's not, well, it's an answer. It's not an answer that people were waiting to hear or expecting to hear. I draw a couple of things from this. To me, I hear that and I think, yes, the internal expectation is the NCAA tournament. Because it's a very stern, like, hey, we're both on the same page. We both had the same idea. We're right there. Let's listen to this one more time. There's a lot of conviction with the fact that, hey, we're both on the exact same page with this.
Well, there's more to it. I mean, and certainly, like I said, you know, what am I going to get into the specifics of what we laid out as expectations or what his expectations were, but I will tell you that what he hopes with this program and what I hope with this program going forward were exactly the same. So, but there's, you know, there's a lot of other things other than just that. But again, what he laid out and what I had in mind were both exactly what we were both on the same page on it.
If it were something more ambiguous than that, like something with more latitude one way or the other, I don't think it would be possible to be saying, like, hey, we both are on the exact same page with this. Because then you're just talking about too much that could come into play. Like, what else would you add to it? Like, Bruce may say, well, assuming we don't have injuries or depending on what the Big 12 may be like, or if we get close and we're in the NIT, but this guy's playing well. There's just too many variables there for both parties to be on the same page, like, definitively. And what we heard there was a pretty definitive, like, Gene going out of his way to be like, look, we are on the same page here. I'm not going to share that publicly, but we are on the same page here. And I think about it, like, if you're husband and wife, like, if the wife is saying, like, look, I need you to do X chore and X chore, and you were to say, well, we are on the same page on this. That can't be like, well, I'm going to do X chore and I'll mow the lawn every week, like, if it hasn't rained and if I'm not too tired. No, you can't be throwing those variables in there and still be on the same page. That's not being on the same page. That's not definitively being on the same page. You're trying to be on the same page. And why then does Gene not go ahead and just publicly say, if I'm telling you I believe that what he's saying there is it is the tournament, why not make that public? I think there's a very easy explanation for that. And I think it's that the only thing that's really accomplished by putting that out there publicly right now is the expectation is added pressure to Bruce and added pressure to the players. I don't think it really accomplishes anything. As long as the internal expectation is this is what needs to be done, you need to get back to the tournament next year, barring some crazy unforeseen circumstance, then what does it matter what's actually being said publicly? What does it matter? Outside of just satisfying, I mean, the only thing that comes from that is added pressure, and you satisfy the message board and Twitter fans of the world. Like, you satisfy those people who are really upset right now, just saying, like, I need someone to bang the gavel and, like, a hard-line stance that we won't stand for this at Kansas State University. Okay, it would make them feel better. But what does that ultimately actually do? And I say that as somebody, by the way, who, if the answer had been, yeah, we need to make the tournament next year, I would have said, fine, that's great. Yes, it puts some added pressure there, but you've earned that added pressure if you're a coach by having the last 2 years where you're finishing as last or next to last in the Big 12. I would have been fine with that. But I also understand why you wouldn't do that. All it does is put a label on it, and then the first time there's a loss next year, everybody will come out of the woodwork being like, wow, well, look at this. You better not be doing that anymore, because the expectation was already laid out here in plain sight for everybody to see, and you're not getting it done. And that will dictate so much of how the narrative of the season goes. And if you're a player, if you're Mark Smith coming in, you're like, man, I've known this guy for a while. He's recruited me 3 times. I'm coming in here, and like, we just lost 3 games in the non-conference schedule. Like, oh, crap. Like, we're going to get this dude fired. It doesn't do anybody a real tangible good other than fans who want some kind of raw meat right now.
All right, so I'm gonna have to throw some wrestling at you here. This is some wrestling lingo that I think, in a way, could be used as an analogy. So there is a term in the wrestling business called going into business for yourself. Now, folks, you might want to pull over for this piece of news, but pro wrestling is predetermined. All right, you have a wrestler that's going to win, and you have a wrestler that is going to lose.
Breaking news.
Yes. Going into business for yourself is, for example, that wrestler is going to lose, but he's afraid about looking bad. So when the guy that's going to win throws a punch at him, he receives the punch but doesn't sell it. You know, doesn't make it look good. And he, in a way, makes the other guy that's going to win look bad while trying to look strong. When that goes down, only he looks good, the guy that's winning doesn't look as strong, and the promotion looks like they've hired some guy that doesn't know how to wrestle, how to sell a punch and look good for the promotion. Doesn't do anybody good besides that guy that is doing the wrong thing in the ring for the business. If Gene Taylor were to come out and just publicly say, oh yeah, Bruce has to make the NCAA tournament, I mean, that's really the only option right now. Who does that benefit? It doesn't benefit K-State. It doesn't benefit Bruce Weber, because what's he going to get from the media the whole time is that, hey, what kind of pressure is this on the program now? Lose a couple of games. Are you feeling more pressure now that you got to make the NCAA tournament? For Gene Taylor, all that would do is make him look good in saying, yeah, hey, I've laid down the law. I've done my job by saying this is what Bruce Weber has to get done, and get some heat off of him from the fans by going into business for himself.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, that's exactly what it does. It would take the faction of people that are like, oh, Gene will just accept mediocrity because look at what the programs were this year. It would potentially change some of their minds to be like, oh, well, look, okay, he's not accepting it. He's publicly saying this and publicly putting the pressure on the guy. You're right. It's exactly what it would accomplish, which in the end is not really accomplishing much, because in the end, Gene's going to be judged on whether or not the guys actually do have success, and in particular, whether or not Chris Klieman actually does have success. And you can say what you will about Gene, but I do believe him when he said another thing he said yesterday, which was paraphrasing, like, basically, hey, I do this job to let the players and the athletes shine. I don't want to be out there in front of the cameras all the time because I just want it to be about those guys. I'm going to do whatever it is that I can to make them successful. And I do believe that he sticks to that. As corny as that may sound, I think that's legitimate. I do. It would only be satisfying him and some ego and some... And by the way, it would be almost like a desperate play to be like, well, I need to satisfy these fans. Like, I have to satisfy these fans. He doesn't need to do that. I don't know if you're paying attention. He just got a contract extension. He just got a raise of like 30%+. Okay? He's okay. He doesn't need you, message board Twitter fan. And I shouldn't say that as despairingly as I do, because I'm with you, and I have been there. But he doesn't need you, frankly, right now to get support. He has clear support from the administration. His coach is going to be back next year, and the guy that he's really tied to right now is the football coach. So there's just not a real need for that. There's really not. And as long as the pressure is internal there, as long as the expectation is internal there and they are on the same page about that, we know that Gene will get done what needs to be done if something needs to happen, if that's not met. This is such an easy thing to forget, and I think people gloss over it so much. I said it with the extension. I'll say it again now. What happened when things really needed to be put in motion for the football program? Gene got it done, and Gene got it done in a way that was far less messy than it could have been. You got an announced retirement, but we know with all the context clues surrounding that, that was not just a voluntary, like, hey, let me walk in, it's time, I'm done. Okay, that took some goading. That took some pushing it down the road. And Gene did that after just one losing football season, by the way. But when it was clear that everything was pointing south, he did not wait too long. He acted swiftly when that had to happen. You could argue, and I would understand the argument, that right now, swift action was already needed with basketball. Okay, maybe. But I think he's shown enough of a track record with a much more delicate situation in football that there should be some trust in what's happening with the basketball situation that it would not get past that point. Bruce will get this year. I would imagine the internal expectations, the tournament, and I would imagine if that doesn't happen, if there's not significant progress next year, that you would see a change. I'm pretty confident in all of that. Gene isn't playing for the satisfaction of right now, for people to be satisfied right now with a question that he's getting asked here on this radio show. So, call me a Gene Homer, whatever it is that you want. If next year they don't make the tournament and nothing's happening, I would hope that you hold me to. Like, I will be standing here like, hey, I feel like something should be done. But that's not where I'm at right now, and that's not where I think Gene needs to be right now on it. All right, so Mark Smith is coming in. Is Mark Smith a good get for K-State basketball? I enlist the help of Carrington Harrison from 610 Sports in Kansas City. He is very connected with the Mizzou program. He's a Mizzou fan. He's watched 3 years of Mark Smith. He'll tell us about that, what he thinks of the fit at K-State, and if we should be making fun of Kansas as much as we are right now. That's all next.
Game News Radio KMAN, John Kurtz with you, and I am joined right now by Carrington Harrison from 610 Sports in Kansas City. He hosts The Drive. You can hear it from 2 to 6 in Kansas City. He's also the biggest Mizzou fan I know, and K-State just landed a transfer in Mark Smith from the Missouri Tigers, who's played there for the past 3 years. I appreciate the time and joining me, CDOT. What's K-State getting in Mark Smith? We'll just start there.
I actually like this pickup for K-State. I think he's a guy who can step in from day one and start for K-State. I think he's a decent shooter. Like, if I had to rank his shooting ability on a scale from 1 to 10, I'd probably put it at, like, a 6. I think he's a good shooter. I think he will make you think he's a better shooter than what he actually is. Like, you look at kind of his form, you look at the rotation, you look at some of the threes he will take, and you'll wonder to yourself why he doesn't shoot at a higher percentage. I wonder how much of it was a confidence thing last year, but it's not like Konzo had a short leash with him. I mean, he got more than enough minutes, more than enough opportunities, and he just couldn't consistently knock down shots. I think he is a below-average ball handler. Like, he will frustrate you with the amount of times that he will turn the ball over because he just can't really take guys off the bounce at a pretty consistent level. Decent defender, but he's not going to be your lockdown. You put him against the other team's best player, he's going to shut him down. He's not that kind of player, but just given the program that K-State is, given where he is, and I look at this more like a grad transfer, I don't really know if K-State can expect to get better grad transfers than Mark Smith.
I would agree. One thing that stands out to me looking at the numbers, I mean, it's like he's a 45% three-point shooter as a sophomore, 31% last year. What seemed to happen there? Like, did he drop off significantly from what he was in his first or second year at Mizzou?
He just wasn't hitting shots. Like, it's really that simple. Like, sometimes it is just a make or miss thing. And it wasn't like he wasn't getting open opportunities. He just wasn't knocking them down. And as I said, like, him not being a good ball handler, he's not a shoot off the dribble kind of guy either. Like, he's going to be a guy where you get a paint touch, you kick it back out to him, and that's primarily how he's going to be able to get his baskets or shot in transition. So you got a 3-on-2 fast break. You kick it to him on the wing, and that's primarily where he's going to get his shots. And they just weren't falling for Mizzou. He's going to be a real streaky player. Like, I could see him having a couple of stretches in which he scores 20 points. And you're thinking, man, where is this? Why can't he do this more consistently? And then he'll have back-to-back games against TCU and West Virginia where he's 2-for-9 from the field and just seems disengaged with the game. Like, he's going to be kind of one of those players for K-State.
Carrington Harrison talking with me from 610 Sports in Kansas City.
you know, to the extent that you know this or are aware of this, as far as like off the court, what kind of a team guy is he? How much can you fill us in on that regard?
I've never heard a bad thing about Mark Smith when it comes to that aspect of it. I don't think there's any sort of ill will. Like with Xavier Pinson, who just transferred from Missouri, maybe some of your listeners are familiar with him. I don't think that he and Konzo were on the same page. And I think it was kind of obvious at the end of the season that they were going in completely different directions. I could see this being a scenario in which Konzo's looking at it. They're probably not going to make the NCAA tournament. Mark only has 1 year left, and he kind of wants to play some of the younger guys to get ready for 2 years from now when they could potentially have a chance to make the tournament. So it just wasn't – it didn't make sense for both sides for him to come back and kind of toil away for a year. So you transfer, you find a spot, you'll get the minutes that you want. I mean, he'll be a guy who plays 25 to 32 minutes for K-State next year. He'll be one of your more productive players. And based on what he said on Instagram, based on kind of what I've heard in Mizzou circles, I don't think this was any ill will. I don't think it was a kid looking to get out of a situation and running to a new situation. I just think it was time to move on.
Makes sense. Carrington Harrison talking with me from 610 Sports in Kansas City. If you're a K-State fan right now, I mean, you're somebody obviously that covers the Big 12 and you've been watching this. How would you feel? How optimistic would you feel about the program and where things are going right now with maintaining Bruce Weber as the head coach?
I give a lot of teams a pass for this year and what happened with COVID. I think a team like K-State that has so many young players, I think you should be really encouraged about the last 4 weeks of the season. Now, it doesn't erase the early part of the season and they didn't look good, but I give Bruce Weber a lot of credit. And maybe a lot of K-State fans don't, but I think it's very easy in K-State situations to sort of get ready for the offseason, to kind of blow past the last 5-6 games of the season, not give full effort, don't care if you win or lose because you're not making the NCAA tournament. But for them to win a game in Kansas City, be super competitive against a Final Four team in Baylor and play them really well for about 34 minutes of that game, for you to beat Oklahoma at home and to get a little bit of confidence and momentum heading towards the season, where now I think the expectation for K-State, like we're kind of having this conversation with the Royals, and I think you'll get the analogy, it can't be about quote-unquote personal development anymore. At some point, you got to hand results. You got to hand me something tangible. That if you're K-State, you got to try to finish in the top six. Like you got to try to avoid session one next year in the Big 12 tournament. And if you do that and you take the step forward, I don't know why you wouldn't consider that a good year for K-State. Obviously, everybody wants to be a tournament team. You want to be a top Big 12 team. I just don't see enough talent there from K-State to think that finishing in the top four is very realistic next season.
All right, C-Dot, you know the enemy of my enemy is my friend. You're a Mizzou fan. We're all K-State fans around here. How much did you enjoy the USC-Kansas beatdown the other day?
Nothing makes me happier than seeing KU lose. And I say this all the time. Maybe you feel the same way. I don't have any issue with the Kansas basketball team. I don't really have any issues with the Kansas basketball program. They've never done anything to me. I don't like KU fans. So seeing them unhappy and making them have to watch a 40-minute beatdown, it wasn't like it was a, oh, we got screwed by the refs. Or no, you got thoroughly pummeled in that game by USC. That I'm not saying it's over for KU because it's obviously not over. They're still going to be a really good team. But if they can't get back to recruiting at a super high level, I just don't know how far KU is going to be able to go in the NCAA tournament. Like, to just be very simple, USC had a top 10 recruit on their team. KU didn't have a top 10 recruit on their team. Like, we're used to KU, when you look at the rivals page, you look at the top 20, they got three of those guys on their team. This upcoming class, their highest rated recruit is 35 on Rivals, which is obviously a very talented player. Everybody would take him, but you're not winning national championships and going to Final Fours if you're not getting the cream of the crop. And we're so used to Kansas getting those kind of players. You got to wonder, at least in the short term, with this Adidas/FBI NCAA cloud over them, if they're going to be able to recruit at the level that they're used to recruiting at.
Oh, 100%. I'm right there with you. And the thing that clued me in on it is, like, you know, last year's recruiting class, they're going after Jethro Muscadin, who K-State was after. And then they're in on Brandon McKissick, the Kansas City transfer, who K-State was after. It's like, if Bill Self is recruiting against Bruce Weber, I mean, that's obviously they're going to win most of those battles, but that is not a good thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I know KU fans just don't want to hear this, but I mean, it's factual. Adidas and top members at Adidas were in the business of funneling high-level recruits to play basketball at Kansas. Like, I don't even think that's an opinion anymore. It's been proven. Kansas agreed that this happened. But it was just arguing whether Kansas knew this was happening. But no one is debating whether or not Adidas was funneling high-level high school basketball players. I don't think they're doing it at least at the level that they were, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. So what does that look like? How do you come out on the other side of it? And I think we're starting to see some of the residual effects of it, that obviously Kansas is a good basketball team. They were the second-best team in the Big 12 this year, but you and I both watched that team. We didn't think that team was going to make a realistic run. Like, that team just wasn't athletic enough. They weren't talented enough to do so. Like, you probably watched the same game I watched yesterday with Arkansas and Baylor. Those teams have better athletes than Kansas, and that's not something that you and I have been able to say for most of our lives. When you look at the top teams in the country and you look at the athleticism, and then you don't think Kansas has those kind of players on their roster.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. You can hear him on The Drive 2 to 6 in Kansas City, 610 Sports Radio. Carrington Harrison, appreciate the time as always, my man, and keep killing it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, John.
All right, there is Carrington Harrison. Some insight on Mark Smith and some insight on Kansas. And I have the perfect bow to put on that conversation because of some recruiting news that I just saw about the Jayhawks here today. And I think you will like it. I'll explain it next. All right, so here is what I meant by a perfect bow to put on that Kansas conversation that Carrington Harrison and I just had. He backs up the theory, as pretty much everybody is right now. I mean, it's really an indisputable fact. Like, Kansas is not recruiting at the level that they used to ever since the NCAA sanctions potentially that are hanging over their head have come into the picture. And I just see today, Kansas picked up a commitment from Bobby Pettiford. Okay, Bobby Pettiford. I saw that name. I saw it come across the group chat. Someone threw it in there. I was like, okay, Bobby Pettiford. That must be, at first I thought, high-profile grad transfer. Nope. High school recruit, prep school kid. I'm like, all right, well, I'd imagine probably like a 4-star kid or something. Nope. 3 stars.
What?
3-star kid. He's ranked number 115 in the country.
Huh.
Like, this is a kid that if K-State landed, you'd be like, all right. Yeah. Okay. Solid. Good. But for Kansas, mighty Kansas, they're slumming around with everybody else, 115. I'm looking at their recruiting class overall right now. I mean, it's ranked, the 2021 class is ranked 14th in the country on Rivals. Okay, 14th. Brad Underwood has the number 15 class at Illinois. Stanford has the number 12 class. Indiana, who doesn't even have a coach right now, has the number 13 class, a spot ahead. Like Michigan, Pittsburgh, Rutgers, Virginia, all around where Kansas is at right now. And let me just read you Bobby Pettiford's offer list here. He wasn't at one time committed to Louisville. All right, so again, like, okay, good program, but like a program that probably is dipping in these waters, you know, around 100 to 150 overall. But here are the rest of the offers. East Carolina, Elon, High Point, Louisville, Maryland, Mississippi, Old Dominion, Providence, Tulsa, Virginia Tech, Clemson. Sounds like the kind of guy that K-State's going after, right? Here's someone else. There's another 3-star recruit in Kansas's class. Sidney Curry, a power forward from Carterville, Illinois. His offer list, Kansas, Mississippi, Seton Hall, Texas A&M. Not ranked in the top 150. They have K.J. Adams, who's ranked number 73 in the country, which, again, 4-star prospect number 73. Like, if K-State landed that player, you'd be like, all right. But Bruce has, by the way, landed players in that same kind of range. Honestly, similar to, like, Malik Harris, where he was at when K-State got him. But the offer list, Arkansas, Baylor, Florida, Georgetown, Iowa, LSU, Miami, Minnesota, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Oregon. You know, like, decent schools, but this is not. Go back 3 years. It's Kansas, North Carolina, Duke. Like, you're seeing that over and over again. That's not the case with this class. Even their highest-rated recruit is the number 35 player in the country. He's a 4-star prospect. It's like Arkansas, Baylor, Nebraska, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, TCU, Texas Tech, Vandy. They're not recruiting with the Blue Bloods right now. Kansas is not recruiting with the Blue Bloods at all. It's not to say that some of these players haven't worked out for them, like, you know, Frank Mason and Devontae Graham. I think I may be thinking of Devontae Graham. Devontae Graham was the one that was committed to, like, App State at one point in time. You know, he turned into a really good player, and he's an NBA player now, but developmental over the course of 4 years. Look, Bill Self's still a great coach, and even if they are pulling in 2 4-star, 2 3-star, bunch of kids between, like, 70 and 115 in the Rivals 150, if they bring those players to Bill Self and he develops them, like, yeah, they'll be a good program. I don't think anybody's arguing here that Kansas is going anywhere as far as being a good program. They're not going to be the bell of the ball anymore. Like, that's not a program that's winning the league 15 times in a row. That's a program that will compete consistently at the top of the league, but will be susceptible to being beaten. It will be human. They are a human program instead of now, am I going to do this right, Mitch? Would I be correct in saying, like, is Thanos some kind of, like, big invincible thing in the comic book movie world?
I recognize the name.
All right. I don't. The only reason
maybe
I
pronounce Thanos.
Well, all I know is that it was what they photoshopped Sister Jean onto, and everybody was making fun of it. But I don't know.
He's a villain.
All right. Seems like that. Yeah. So they're not Thanos anymore. You know, they're just like, I can't finish the analogy because I think the comic book movies are the least interesting thing on the planet. But you see what I'm saying. There's just further and further evidence. Like, they are not able to recruit at the level that they were. Jethro Muscadin, Bruce Weber is going up against Bill Self for him that they pull in last year. Like, Christian Brown. I mean, honestly, like, when Christian Brown is your best player, I mean, Christian Brown would be a player that you'd love to have here at K-State. And he is, like, a pretty good Big 12 player. But, like, if that's your number one dude instead of, oh, I don't know, Joel Embiid or Andrew Wiggins or Sharon Collins, like, boy, that's a different kind of world. Welcome to the world that the rest of us are living in, Kansas Jayhawks.
So this guy, this Pettiford guy, beg your pardon if you mentioned this guy's trying to multitask here, but he's from Creedmoor, North Carolina. That is 10 miles from Durham and about 15 miles from Raleigh. Duke and North Carolina were like, nah, we're good, dude.
Well, Raleigh's NC State, but Chapel Hill, I'm sure, is very close there, too. Yes, I know. It's a great point that you make.
Chapel Hill is 12 miles.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's a great point that you make. The Blue Bloods around there weren't interested. Now, I mean, he's got East Carolina, North Carolina, Wilmington, North Carolina, A&T, and UNC Greensboro listed among the offers. So, you know, some people took notice there. But, you know, Bill Self able to recruit East Carolina. Congratulations there, Billy Boy. It's going to be a different world for Kansas to live in for a little while here. And it allows the rest of the Big 12 to exhale. Because, man, watching Baylor play last night, totally different level than anything you ever saw out of Kansas this year. Baylor, at times, especially in that first half, went into K-State game in Waco mode, where they just looked unstoppable and untouchable. A lot of fun to watch. Kansas is not on that level. I want to play you one funny clip here to send us into Jabroni of the Week and cap off the show. A lot of times, we'll bring up the fact that you hear a lot of coach speak out of coaches. They'll just stammer around, not really give you the answer that you're looking for, not give you any kind of answer at all, but it kills time, and they've technically answered your question, even though they have not really answered your question. Van Malone cut through all the BS with that today. Derek Young asked him a question about nickelbacks and, like, who's playing at nickel right now because they've had a lot of injury issues there. This was the end of Van Malone's answer to that, and this is great.
Throughout the season as a staff, we've mixed and matched different personnel at that position as well as others to be able to make sure that we would find ourselves in a good position. I know I didn't answer your question, but I did that on purpose.
That's great. Like, at least you're honest. I mean, and that was after, like, a minute-long answer. But you can tell, you can sense in the middle of this that he realizes, like, man, I'm just BSing. Like, I'm just saying words. I'm just saying words that sound good and sound coach speaky. And he's like, yeah, you know what? I'm not even going to mess around with this.
Throughout the season as a staff, we've mixed and matched different personnel at that position as well as others, to be able to make sure that we would find ourselves in a good position. I know I didn't answer your question, but I did that on purpose.
I appreciate the honesty. A lot of times, I just if you would just come out and say that, I would appreciate it. So much more refreshing than just getting the answer in the time killer. And it was like, sometimes it felt like with Snyder, he was just excellent at giving non-answers, but giving them in long, time-consuming ways to just sort of fill up as much time as possible and get that press conference moving as much as you possibly can. If at the end of it he would have just said, "Now I know that didn't answer your question, but I did that on purpose," I'd be like, "Oh, all right. Yeah. Playing the game. That's cool." As much transparency as we can get on that front, I'm here for it. Van Malone is going to be a head coach someday, definitely working his way up toward that. I'm sure whoever it is that covers him at that point in time will have much more respect for him just being like, "You know what? That was a BS answer, but I had to give it to you because that's how the game goes." They'll appreciate that way more than just, you know, giving the answer, giving the fart around answer. Van Malone is awesome.
Did he bust any chops with Ryan Black today?
Yeah, he did. He did, of course. I don't remember the specifics of it because I was handling my own situation where my mic wasn't working on the computer and
And he spent this money to try to sound professional and look good on the webcam.
It wasn't the webcam. It wasn't the webcam's fault necessarily, and I was trying to get like whatever crappy mic is on that thing to work, but it was just not going for me. And the external mic that I'd bought, it wasn't working.
John.
And it was a mess. It was a whole thing. And Van did at the end. I wouldn't even say he was busting my chops. My question didn't work like three times as I'm trying to, you know, ask it and change things up. And at the end of the press conference, he did say, he was like, "Oh, sorry, John." I was like, "Okay, great." So I just punted on the rest of the thing. Everybody else could do the work. This is karma because last week I said, "Hey, me and Derek had to do all the work asking all the questions. Me, Derek, and Fitz were the only ones on there asking questions." And then I was like, maybe I shouldn't have said that. That's exactly why I shouldn't have said that, because karma came around and bit me today. It bit me.
Karma chameleon.
Karma chameleon indeed. Mitch's Jabroni of the Week is next.
And then everyone said, "Jabroni.
You jabronis hit the jackpot.
That jabroni you have sitting in your studio.
Ow. Is this Jabroni's name?"
Jabroni of the Week.
It's Tuesday. You know what that means.
You guys know how the game is played.
Three dishonorable mentions. I'll culminate with my Jabroni of the Week. Let's get right to it. My first dishonorable mention is Oregon State men's basketball team. Last night, they got roughed up a little bit, even though it got a little bit closer at the end.
Oh, they were so bad in the last, like, 3 minutes of that game.
Yeah, the Cougars of Houston beat Oregon State. Now, here's the kicker about that, though, is that according to a writer from the Oregonian,
yeah,
Oregon State, when they got back to the hotel, they were greeted by some officials from the NCAA that says that they need to hurry up and get their stuff out of their rooms because their flight is going to leave at, get this, 1:15 in the morning. 1:15 in the morning. They have to hustle out of the hotel room. They were not told before they left the hotel. They were not told before the game that day. They were told after the game, when they got back to the hotel, that they're flying out that morning. They flew into Eugene at 2:52 a.m., and arrive back in Corvallis at 4 a.m.
Okay. That should be the NCAA that is on the chopping block for being a jabroni.
Hey, the NCAA wasn't flying back to Oregon.
What?
Quit being so far away.
What about the student-athlete experience?
Lose. I mean,
it's all about the student-athlete experience. Oh, hey, sorry you lost and missed out on your dreams.
Well,
you better be sprinting out of there with your underwear in your hand and your bags ready to go. Because you guys are on the red eye here that we didn't tell you about.
Arkansas left at 10 this morning. My next dishonorable mention is horse jockey Adrian McCarthy. Adrian McCarthy has been suspended from horse racing for 6 months because his latest drug test revealed that he had tested 1,000 times over the British Horse Racing Authority's cocaine threshold. This dude loves the booger sugar.
Wow.
Nasal basil. I just heard that term for cocaine the other day. Nasal basil.
Who you been hanging out with?
They said it on the Levitard show.
Okay. Well, McCarthy said his reason is because he's been depressed during the COVID-19 lockdown, that he's been doing cocaine 3 times a week. Liar. Way more than three times a week.
3 times a day,
yeah, no
maybe.
No kidding.
3 times a week.
My last dishonorable mention is going to be Formula One racer Fernando Alonso. Alonso this past weekend was making his big return to F1 racing. He's a 2-time champion, world champion racer, but he had been retired for 3 years. So in the race, it looks like he's going to get a top 10 finish out of 20 racers, except it runs into an issue. He begins struggling with overheating brakes, and he's forced to pit, and the car was in such bad shape he had to retire. The issue was, when they did their post-race analysis on the car, it was discovered the problem was a discarded sandwich wrapper that got lodged inside the brake duct and had to retire from the race, finished officially 19th out of 20 racers.
Boy, if I had a dime for every time I've repaired my brake duct, I'll tell you what.
But finally, my jabroni of the week is Baylor women basketball coach Kim Mulkey. First of all, got screwed out of a bad no call at the end of the UConn game. If they would have hit the shot, that was a game winner. They lost by 2 points. And then in the post-game press conference, Kim Mulkey delivers this quote about COVID testing.
I don't think my words will matter, but after the games today and tomorrow, there's 4 teams left, I think, on the men's side and the women's side. They need to dump the COVID testing. Wouldn't it be a shame to keep COVID testing and then you got kids that end up having test positive or something and they don't get to play in a Final Four? So you need to just forget the COVID test and let the 4 teams that are playing in each Final Four go battle it out.
Sure, just get rid of testing. You know, somebody tests positive, so what? Go play the Final Four and, you know, get everybody else sick. You go home, maybe get your roommates, your family sick. The thing spreads again, but hey, as long as you get to play some basketball.
Well, here's my problem with it. I guess, whatever. You do what you want to do. But everybody was on her side. Like, her team, they got screwed. There was a foul at the end of the game. Kim Mulkey is not the most sympathetic figure, but everybody was on her side and her team's side, and then she just took it and threw it away. Because now nobody is talking about the fact that her team got screwed. We're all talking about this COVID quote. It's just and she's been sitting on that the entire year, and like now you're, I don't know. It's Kim Mulkey.